It's time to get into the Inside Edge.
Shoot that, he scores!
The latest about the CBJ and the NHL.
Presented by your Greater Columbus Kia dealers and the new 2019 Kia Sorento. Conquer your mountain.
Here's your hosts of the Inside Edge, Bob McGilligan and Jody Shelley.
Welcome to the Inside Edge presented by Kia here on 97.1 The Fan. I am sad to inform you this is the final show of the year. We had been hoping that there would be more, but there's not. I'm Bob McGilligan alongside of Jody Shelley. And Jody, actually today we were hoping there would be no show because there would be a Game 7 taking place in Boston between the Blue Jackets and the Bruins. But those plans were blown up 2 nights ago at Nationwide Arena. After a couple of days to sit and think about it, I don't know how you are, but I did an interview with somebody this morning, and I found out that I was still, I don't know if bitter is the word or disappointed. Well, it's disappointed, definitely. Yeah. But the hurt is still there after the series loss. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. It's not even been 48 hours since that final horn went off at Nationwide Arena. And, no, there was so much promise. There was so much excitement. We saw the team come together in round one. To me, it's the path to the Stanley Cup. The Eastern Conference Finals is Boston or Columbus versus the Carolina Hurricanes. And, I mean, just think about that. You could have taken a poll of 9,000 people in October and asked if Carolina was going to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, and you would have had everyone would have said not a chance. No
well,
chance.
Well, if they lived in Raleigh, they might have said yes.
I don't even know about
no,
that.
The owner of the Hurricanes.
Yeah, he was high demand. And what a year for them. But I'm saying the path to the Stanley Cup, the big boys are out. The guys in the West, like Vegas, who I found intimidating just because of their home ice and the way they played the game. Washington, Pittsburgh, you know, the nemesis in the Metropolitan Division were knocked out. This was a year where the path was different, and you know someone weird is going to win the Stanley Cup. And the Blue Jackets here against the Bruins, I look at that series, I look at Game 4, to me, was the pivotal moment. The moment when they had the Bruins down 2-1, and they let them off the mat for a breath of fresh air by taking too many penalties and letting the big boys get a little comfortable with the puck and then feeling good about themselves. And, you know, it was too bad. And, no, it's going to sting. This is going to sting for a while, and I'm telling you, the further you go, the worse it is. Because we were going – this is what I thought, Bob. When you get to the first round, you're excited. I mean, everyone's excited. That was like a roller coaster of emotion that was – I mean, it was so hard to replicate what everyone felt with that four-game sweep, the upset of the number one seed, and the Blue Jackets now going to be able to do anything. Round two, now you're – the second season has started. Didn't you feel like – you're in a season now. It's just another game. There's another game in 2 nights.
Especially with a week off in between the two series. It really made it feel like that.
It was long, right? I mean, it was like you weren't – the excitement was there when the puck was on the ice, but you knew the Bruins. You knew what was coming in that series. It felt like much more than six games were played. It felt like a lot of – there was more games played in that series than just six. And yeah, I mean, all those things. But the biggest thing to me is the path to the Stanley Cup is clear, and I think they would have rolled the Carolina Hurricanes in the Stanley Cup Eastern Conference Finals and been to the finals, and that's the part that stings. It wasn't like they played Boston, and it was a mismatch, and oh, boy, too bad you got the Bruins. No, it was they should have beat the Bruins, and they should be in the Eastern Conference Finals.
I agree. Obviously, I'm going to agree with that, and they had – they had game one. They were down 1-0 until the third period. They get 2 goals in 13 seconds. The path is there in that game, too. I mean, they've got the opportunity to win that game. And if you win that game, now not only do you lead the series, you've taken one in their building. Oh. You've won 5 in a row now. And even the Boston Bruins, who are coming off a 7-game series, are going, these guys are for real.
Killed their spirit.
Right? But they didn't. And they end up losing that game in overtime, and that's a heartbreaker. And then you come back and you fight to win the second game in the double overtime. Okay, took care of that business. You split. You get the win at home, and then, like you said, that fourth game, once you have the chance to look back at the whole thing in retrospect,
yeah,
the fourth game is a difference in the whole thing.
I totally agree with you. And, I mean, they could have won. The fifth game, to me, was puzzling. And they did it this season a couple times when – they would come out with a start like they came out with. And for the first two periods, they didn't play their brand of hockey. It was like they forgot or they were nervous. I wonder if they were too focused on not taking minor penalties because that was the focus coming out of game number four. And then, you know, they came on late, and I really thought that that was a confidence booster, that the way they ended. Like, just throw the puck at Rask and let's go at these guys. You get one, you get three. And then in game six, you just couldn't score. And that was, you know, and too bad it came down to game six. You never want to see it get it that far. I think the lesson needs to be don't even think about elimination early in the series for yourself. Don't wait. Don't wait. Take care of business, the shift, the day. I when I look back at it, it's easy to say now. I mean, you know, it was so close. It was so close. It was the bounces in game six that won the Bruins, and it was such a close series. You can look at the posts. But to me, I thought that the Bruins had more guys that understood the urgency of each and every moment to lock it down.
And to make a further point on what you said about at times during the year, there were things that you saw, like getting off to the slow start and then turning it on late. That's why in game six, even when it's 1-0, I'm saying to myself, I don't think they're going to win this game, because how many times do we see them in the regular season just not be able to score? I mean, Tuukka Rask was great. Don't get me wrong. I'm not taking it away from him. Yes, they hit four or five posts. I get it. But during the season, there were games that you just knew they're not going to get a goal. It's just not going to happen. And based on that experience, I felt that way at 1-0. And the moment it got to 2-0, I was like, well, this is over. Especially the 2-0 goal was not a great goal. It was I don't know if it's fair to say.
No, it was savable. Rask would have saved it.
Right. So it's a soft goal. That one goes in. And now, if I'm sitting all those feet above the ice saying to myself, great, you can't score one, now you have to score two, what do you think the mindset on the bench is?
Well, to me, it's crazy that the two games, game four and game five, where the Bruins scored the first goal, also combined with the power play coming up with nothing, continued in game six. They didn't get the first goal in game six, and the power play was non-existent. I just think that those things, those are your best players on the power play. What, like, let's go. Dial it up. You guys are better than the Bruins defense, in my mind, when they're on and hunting down pucks. You're not getting the breaks, and it's halfway through the game, and you're down one. Who cares? There's a belief there, I would. And then you can tell my voice, I'm still upset and getting fired up, because there's a belief there in this team. And we saw it, and it was so evident in the first round. It was so evident in parts of this series that to come out and say, oh, we just didn't get the bounce, that's not good enough for me. I just think that this team needed to will their way, especially at home, to get that one goal, because, you know, the roof was ready to blow off this place in game six. And that was the advantage of being here at home, and they didn't take advantage of it, and then it got away from them.
We've used the word confidence so many times this year that if we had a dollar for every time that we said it, we would have a great end of the season party. No doubt about it.
Yeah, we probably would.
But to say it one more time, and what you're talking about, the power play was tops in the playoffs through the first round. It was lights out. We didn't see it like that all year long. All of a sudden, it was the best. And then it went back to being the worst very quickly. So that word, confidence, the questioning yourself, the maybe the disbelief until you see something happen. To me, again, looking back now and having 2 days to think about it, almost 2 days, I think that plagues this team. And I don't know why, but it's the mental mindset. The thing that Torch talks about all the time, playing the game between the ears. Maybe it's the youth, maybe it's the inexperience in some ways, but that, and it's maddening to me because it seems so easy, right? Shut your brain off and play. It's a lot easier said than done.
Yeah, and you look at the opportunities they had in the first round. I go back to the first round because they played a perfect game where they waited and waited and waited and waited. And when it happened, when they got their opportunity, they put the puck in the net or they created momentum. And that's the key to a playoff series, is waiting for your moment. You're going to get the moment, but continue to play the team game. And what, I don't know what happens on the power play. Do guys get selfish? I mean, is there a moment when you have the puck on your stick and you see the open guy, but you think you're going to have the opportunity to be the guy? I don't know.
Or is it the other way, where you see
You're unselfish.
You're trying to get it to somebody when maybe you should be selfish.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. And we saw that a little bit, and I thought I saw it with Dubois towards the later part of the season. Was he had Panarin and Atkinson, and who was he going to give the puck to? They both wanted it. So, you know, there's dynamics out there mentally, and that's a big part of what was happening with this team, I guess, in the power play. Three games, I mean, in the regular season, three games without a power play goal, it's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. But in the playoffs, it's immense, and that's the other thing they have to believe is and understand is opportunities are not – they may not come around again. And I say that in-game. I mean, the moment you have the puck on your stick on a breakaway, it's an opportunity to – like you look at Savard's shot, I mean, in game number one. You look at Seth Jones' power play goal in game number one. Those were chances that you don't know if you're going to get that again. You don't know if you're going to get a power play again. Those chances have got to go, and I go to game four, all the chances Boone Jenner had shorthanded. I mean, one of those has got to go in, and that's just the urgency, and to look at the opportunity in a bigger perspective, you don't know when you're going to see a playoffs like it's been like this year where the big boys are out, and you don't know if you're ever going to get this chance to be one or two wins away from the Eastern Conference Finals. When is that going to happen again? You're losing your number one goalie. You're losing Panarin. Okay, it might happen next year. I don't know. But in the moment of the playoffs, you need to understand the situation you're in and say, okay, it's going to be – it might be four, five, six more weeks of work, but this is our chance to win the Stanley Cup. And I say that because I've played with players, and namely Jeremy Roenick. When we were in San Jose, I remember – never forget, he stood up at a dinner and he said, this is my 20th year or whatever in the National Hockey League. My first year with Chicago, we went to Stanley Cup Finals, and I thought I was going to be back there every year. I've never been back, but this is the best team in the league in San Jose. This is our chance. And you could see the young guys, you know, they didn't really register. You see the guys that were a little older, and they're like, yeah, this is our chance. And there wasn't enough guys in that room that understood that this was the chance. This is the one opportunity maybe in your entire career, you don't know when your career is going to end, to go for a Stanley Cup. And that, to me, was obviously the best opportunity of this organization's chance. But some of these guys, some of these older guys, some of these guys have been around. I know it's a young core, but, you know, this was a really good opportunity.
You know, and I'm listening to everything you're saying, and I know you're right, but one of the things that you said was the big boys were out. And I guess the question is, you know, do you ever become one of the big boys? And that's what you want to know. But when you have potential departures – like this team has,
yeah,
you can't expect to be a big boy in the near future. I mean, not next year. Maybe you do. Maybe free agent signings, we don't know what's going to happen. I get it. But, yes, what you just said is when you clear those people out of the way, until you can be one of the big boys and be in it year after year, until you're Pittsburgh and you're in it 7, 8, 9, 10 years in a row, when every year is a question as to whether or not you're going to be in, yeah, you're right. That's what makes it hurt so bad.
And this is going to be a hard team to play against no matter what. Mm-hmm. And I look at the way there's more game sevens in the Stanley Cup playoffs than there are sweeps. And that just tells you what's happening in this league. St. Louis is a magical story. They came together at the right time. Columbus was a magical story. They came together at the right time. Carolina, I've never seen anything like it, but it's team spirit to the max. And those are dangerous teams, but they're the teams, even the New York Islanders. I mean, the league is changing a little bit. The league is changing. The superstars are getting older, and some of the superstars are stuck in situations where they're not really – I mean, it's not a superstar league where one superstar is going to carry this. It never really has been. And I think Connor McDavid in Edmonton is one, and you have Austin Matthews in Toronto. But some of the older boys, they're getting older. Ovechkin, Crosby, Tavares, I think he's been a star, but he's a complement of star. I think that this league now, with the way that things are going and the young guys coming in, there's going to be more and more parity moving forward. And I think that everyone comes in with high-end talent. Every young kid comes into this league now with high-end talent. And I think that's what's – I think it's going to be more and more parity, and it's going to be way more interesting as these years come forward.
And some of those guys that you're talking about not only are getting older, but they're making big salaries – to where you can't afford to have, you know, some teams have two of them. The good teams have two of them. But now, if you have two of them, a lot of your salary cap is sucked up in the two of them, and now you're hoping for those young guys to come in and be really, really good right off the bat.
Yeah, but you look at St. Louis, and who are their superstars?
Well, that's a good point.
They've got a lot of B guys who are great. They're great. O'Reilly's awesome at what he does. He understands his role. Perron is a guy who's been around forever, but he's been a spark plug. Patrick Maroon's bounced around. He got a Game 7 overtime winner last night. Their goalie, who's their goalie?
Rookie.
I know. I mean, it's and the goalie scenario has changed.
Yeah, let's talk about that in the next segment.
Yeah, that is very, very interesting.
Way different.
And to me, what's happening, and listen, I hate to say it, but it's a flat-out fact. It's a copycat league. Everyone stands back and says, I'll never forget, because it was the lockout year, and Anaheim won the cup. And after the lockout, everyone thought, well, tough guys are gone. This game is changing. The rules, everyone's gone. Well, guess who wins the cup? The Anaheim Ducks. The best thing for a tough guy in existence, because George Parros, Sean Thornton, they had tons of them. And so it's a, and everyone stuck with that. And that's just a personal story, because that really hit home and that meant a lot.
That's a wonder that that sticks with you after all these years.
But it gave me another, 10 years in the league. So, but what I'm saying is teams will step back and say how'd they do it, how'd they manage their cap, how did this guy fit in. Justin Williams, I mean, he's an old player. He's won 3 Stanley Cups, but he's the captain. There's a dynamic that teams are starting to figure out, that it's not just high-end pieces. You don't just fill the garage with Ferraris, you know, because you're going to need a truck one day to go hail hay, and you're going to need the dump truck to bring in some rocks. So there's a combination there and a dynamic of liking each other, too.
See, that's what I'm going to miss all summer, is your analogies, because they're dead-on real-life analogies. They really are.
Oh, you can call anytime.
Yeah, no. All right. Yeah, let's talk about some of those things and how the league has changed with that, and especially with the goaltending, because it's a situation we're going to talk about here all summer until it's figured out, and it won't be until who knows when, but it's going to change. And is change a good thing or a bad thing? I have my opinion. I'm sure Jody does too. We'll talk about it as we continue with the Inside Edge, presented by Kia, here on 97.1 The Fan. Welcome back to the Inside Edge here on 97.1 The Fan. It's presented by Kia. Bob McElligott and Jody Shelley with you one last time before we wrap up the 2018-2019 Blue Jackets season. It went to the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and it went 6 games in before the Boston Bruins were able to move on to face the Carolina Hurricanes. Let's talk about goaltending and where it is in the National Hockey League right now. And let's just say, okay, there are 3 teams that are already in the finals. The goaltenders, Tuukka Rask. Okay, that makes sense. He's been around for a long time. Great job. All right. Curtis McElhinney, Sergei Bobrovsky's former backup. And he is starting because Peter Mrazek got hurt. Peter Mrazek, who was with the Detroit Red Wings, by the end of his tenure there, they couldn't wait to get him out of town for some reason. I don't know why. He went to the Philadelphia Flyers. The Flyers, who haven't had a goaltender for 25 years, decided to let him go. He's out of that job, too. Then he goes to Carolina. He and McElhinney split time all year. They make it into the playoffs. Mrazek starts, plays until he gets hurt. Now McElhinney is there. He's in the final. Then you go to the other side, the St. Louis Blues. We talked about this. Jordan Binnington. He's a rookie. He's in the Western Conference Final. And then when you get to the other team that will get there, because there's a Game 7 between Colorado and San Jose tonight, you're either going to have Martin Jones. Okay, he's been in that net for a while there for the San Jose Sharks. That makes sense. Or you're going to have Philip Grubauer, who was traded from Washington to Colorado last year and has his team on the verge of moving to the Conference Final in the West. So my point is, other than Tuukka Rask, there are no bona fide goaltending superstars. No offense to Martin Jones. He's fine. He's adequate. He's got a very good team around him. And I think that is the key, Jody, that you can win in this league with adequate goaltending as long as you have a good team built around them. Robin Leonard sucked in Ottawa, sucked in Buffalo, goes to the New York Islanders, has them in the playoffs, has them win the first round in a sweep, for crying out loud. So, again, I think that's changed. I think, the days of the $10 million goaltender, as you said, teams are – it's copycat league. And if I'm a GM, I'm saying, if I can pay a guy 5 to 6 and surround him with good players and get to the playoffs and have a chance to win, I'm much better with that than paying a guy 10 to 12 and having so much money tied up in that one position.
Well, and Tuukka Rask averages 7 million a year. And Leonard was 1.5. McElhinney's under a million.
1.5.
1.5 for 1 year. And so that's where the other – Grubauer's 3.3 average for 3 years.
Wait a minute. So you could get Robin Leonard potentially for $3 million a year and double his salary from this past year.
Yes. And that's a team that was interested in Bobrovsky. And that's – and listen, I'm telling you, 8 years for Bobrovsky. He's 31 years old, I think. There's a salary cap. I know the cap is going to grow. Okay, it's going to grow over the next. I heard it's going to be $100 million in the next 5 years or something like that, which seems astronomical because I think it started at $36 million after the lockout in 2004. It's crazy, but listen, teams are figuring out that you can't have an albatross in one position. I mean, I understand Connor McDavid. I understand what they did there to have him sign long-term in Edmonton, okay? Edmonton's not your first choice in the National Hockey League if you're a free agent for a number of reasons.
Most of them are below zero.
Most of them are 40 below. But that's just reality. I love Edmonton. My family lives there. But this is a superstar like they've never seen. Listen, Pittsburgh, I don't know about you, but Pittsburgh's not the greatest town in the world.
Let me tell you, I had to go into Pittsburgh yesterday. And I got there, and this was stupid of my part, but I got there near rush hour, and my wife says to me, would you ever want to live here? No, absolutely not.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Mario lived there long term. Sid is there long term. They've got superstars. When that ends, I don't know if free agents go to Pittsburgh, Vegas, Florida, L.A., New York. Columbus. I'd put that all ahead of Pittsburgh.
Arizona. Did you say Arizona? Because no, that's going to be on the list.
Dallas.
Right. Absolutely.
Nashville.
And some of those places even have no state income
tax.
That's
what I'm saying.
Oh,
too,
by
yeah.
the way.
Yeah.
That's your salary goes up.
So I understand Edmonton to get back on my.
Yeah.
You know, you sign the player. He's there long term. You're going to build around him. He has changed the downtown of Edmonton, not only the organization, but the
it's
downtown.
It's the house that Connor McDavid built, really.
Exactly. But where does Sergei Bobrovsky? I'm not sure now with teams watching the landscape of what's happened here. And he made over $7 million this year. Is he really looking to get $10 to $12 million? And if he does at a long-term contract, I get it for 4 years. Mm-hmm. I do. I understand it, 4 years. But I don't understand 8 years at that. But what do I know? That's just my opinion right now, finishing the season. Watching, sure, he brought the team to the second round, Bob, but Tuukka Rask was the better goalie in games 4, 5, and 6 when they really needed him, and I just that bothers me a little bit that Bobrovsky didn't take this organization to the next round. There was a weak goal, I thought, in every single game. In my opinion, I'm not a goalie, I don't know what he sees, but that's just from where I see it. I thought Rask made saves he didn't see. He made plays he didn't need to make, but he was confident in the net, and I think that really helped with everything they were doing. And not that Sergei wasn't spectacular at moments, but there was the moments where he wasn't. And so that bothers me a little bit. But this whole goaltending thing, yeah, I agree with you. Your point of building a great team and great leadership around a goalie that everyone loves and admires and is there when they need him the most, that to me is amazing. It's amazing what's gone on in Carolina. And anyone that saw that coming is a flat-out liar. Because Curtis McElhinney went in when we were there. He played against us, I think, his first game.
Yes.
Picked up on waivers, and he was outstanding.
Yeah.
And then they played Mrazek against us late in the year. And we always eat up Mrazek.
Right. And I remember when McElhinney was announced he was going to start that game, I said, thank God. There's a good chance for a win. Wasn't
right.
That was a home opener here, right?
I believe it was.
Yeah, the home opener here in Nationwide Arena.
Yeah, it was early in October, yeah.
And, you know, you go on the road, and then you come back open in Detroit, have to go to overtime and win
That's
the opener.
Right.
Come back
Is
home.
That this year? Wow.
It seems like it was 10 years ago. You're right. And then McElhinney sticks it to them. But, yeah, I totally agree on this thing. And I've said this for a while with the goalie thing, but I'm going to ask you this. And, I mean, a $5 million goalie. You can win with a $5 million goalie. You really can. But let me put it to you this way, and you tell me if you agree or disagree. 7 years Sergei Bobrovsky has been here. He's been great. But for 7 years, they have leaned on him. Every year, I find myself saying, that they're, you know, it's Bobrovsky. They're waiting for Bobrovsky. Earlier this year when he was not good, they weren't winning games. Corposalo then finally goes in the net and he plays well and they win some games there. Quite honestly, I don't know if this is too strong to say, but I'll say it now because, again, it's still fresh. The loss is fresh. I'm almost tired of watching this team rely on Sergei Bobrovsky. I'm almost ready to see. Just get somebody else. And, oh, by the way, how about don't always wait on that guy. Pick up some responsibility. Go score more goals.
Yeah.
Don't make it be a 2-1 game. Find a way to get the puck in the net more and become consistent winning with 4 goals and 5 goals a game instead of just cranking out 2 and hoping to God that he can be the guy that's going to save it.
Yeah, and they'll have to change their style a little bit. I think you're tired of the Sergei Bobrovsky saga. I think you're tired from the opening press conference this year where he came in and said he's not talking, and then he gets suspended for a game in Tampa because he left the ice and was pulled and went out and went away from the locker room, whatever he did. I think you're tired of wondering if he wants to be a part of this organization anymore. He's done a great job while he's here, but it seems like he doesn't want to be a Blue Jackets player anymore. And I think we're a little bit we take that personally now. I mean, I think it's a moment where we're like, okay, you know what? We love you here. We appreciate what you've done. You don't want to be a part of the Blue Jackets anymore. Off you go. You did some great things this year, but overall, this year was a lot like your time here. You brought us so far, and then you've let us down you didn't take us to the next level like Rask did for the Bruins.
Mm-hmm. That and the fact that, yeah, you're right, and it does bother me. You're right. And the other thing that bothers me is, and what I can't wrap my mind around, and I didn't play like you did, so if that's the reason, just tell me. But if this guy stays here, you know, there is debate, and there has been debate ever since Rick Nash retired about whether or not his number goes in the rafters in Nationwide Arena. If Sergei Bobrovsky stays here, there is zero discussion about whether or not number 72 goes into the rafters.
Yeah.
Beyond the shadow of a doubt, he can live in infamy in the history of this franchise. No question. And yet, he doesn't want to do that, and that's what I just can't understand.
That's what takes us, yeah. Well, that's the reality of being where we're at. I mean, he is a world-class, one of the best goaltenders in the world. We know that. But I just think as we stand here today and the combination of him wanting to be out the door, as it appears, and the combination of him, like you said, waiting for him to do stuff in the playoffs. Now he's done a little bit. He's done a lot. I mean, he got the team in the playoffs, and he got them to the second round. But I would, you know, attack the second round and take him to the Eastern Conference Finals. And I know I'm repeating myself, but, yeah, that's a bad feeling as we sit here 2 days after the season being over. You know, that's where we're at. This is how we feel about this. And I think the goaltending landscape, I think with Bobrovsky moving on, I think the way that Binnington has come in as a rookie for the St. Louis Blues, I think that the way these other no-names have risen, it's so encouraging for the situation here. And I'm not saying that just to say it.
Right.
And I don't know. I've never seen Elvis Merzlikins stop a puck. I've seen Corposalo play. I love Corposalo. But he's young. And he's been a backup for the last 2 years, 3 years. You know, I don't know the Russian kid they just signed, but they love him. I don't know the other players that they have. They have a Finn they like. Mm-hmm. I have never seen them stop a puck, but you know what? They're going to fit in here somewhere. Someone's going to come in here and compete for the number one position as the Blue Jackets netminder. And who knows? It doesn't have to be the focal point of the team anymore, as that is the superstar. I love Sergei as a leader. I love him as a person. I love what he's brought to the organization. But moving forward, I think that the whole situation and the landscape in the NHL is great for this situation that's happening here.
Yep. No, I agree with you on that. And we've gone long on this segment, but guess what? We needed to because it's really, really important. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about personnel as we look to the future of the Blue Jackets because everything else is now in the past after losing to the Boston Bruins just a couple of days ago. This is the Inside Edge presented by Kia on 97.1 The Fan.
I want to thank the community as far as just the incredible support that we've had here. During the playoff run, and quite honestly, during the regular season, we're going up and down. I just can't thank the community enough as far as what it did for our hockey club.
Blue Jackets head coach John Tortorella, earlier today, you can hear the appreciation that he has for Columbus and for the Central Ohio area and for you and coming out and backing this team the way that you did. Everything from coming to the games to standing outside and waiting for autographs to packing over 5,000 people in for a scrimmage in between round one and round two, and especially putting 19,000 people in the building for every game and making this a very hostile place to play.
Well, and you know, John Tortorella lives in a farm north of the city, and he's a guy that he's very appreciative of his time away from the rink. He's appreciative from his time at the rink, but he's a guy that anyone that's never met him or interacted with him, they have this image of what he's all about. But I'll tell you what, when he sees a fan, when he sees a when someone strikes up a conversation with him, he appreciates and he acknowledges, and he's an open book with a lot of things. And I know, and you know, this run has really escalated the visibility of the Blue Jackets, broadcasters, coaches, players. I mean, everyone wants to talk Blue Jackets. I can only imagine what it's been like for him. I know, he probably doesn't go to the grocery store, but I'm sure he goes and gets gas because he needs to fill up his tractors with gas. I'm sure he goes, he's around town in the part of town that he lives in. And his interaction, he's probably in amazement with from the time he got here to where he's at now. The people in this area and this community appreciate him for what he's brought to this team, the accountability, the heart on your sleeve attitude, but also how he's led this team to be one of those teams you're proud to be a part of, proud to watch as a fan. So it's good to see him acknowledge that, because he gets what kind of community he's in, and that to me shows a certain level of respect for the job he has and the place he lives in.
He's an East Coaster, so he is very, very, can be loud and boisterous.
Smart.
Yeah, right. Of course. But again, in this Midwest attitude, a lot of times there is a nicety about the people. And he has the nicety when he talks today, but in the heat of passion of the game, it's not always very nice. And that's why I think that he is the perfect coach at this time, in this place, as this city is really transforming into totally understanding the game and what it's all about, because he can communicate it, and because I think when you watch him, I think you feel like he does in many, many situations, whether it's elated or whether it is really agitated or aggravated. I think if you're a fan and you're understanding the game, and many more people are now, they're coming to it, they're understanding it, I think you feel like he does, and I think he represents it really well.
It is amazing and refreshing to see how he does things, because we don't have it enough in society. And I think as a professional athlete, and I think people on the outside, don't understand that the way he conducts his business is not how things are done. Conversations aren't had. Elephants stay in locker rooms. Issues are never brought up or spoken of because you don't want the confrontation. John Tortorella, if there's an issue or something, or you're not pulling your weight, he will address you one-on-one, alone, or in front of the group. There's a standard set, and he holds people accountable. And as he said the first day when he came here, I'll never forget it, it's a fun word to throw around. Everyone wants to say they hold people accountable. It's hard. It's probably lonely, because you're the guy, not going to be the guy that's going to be called on Friday night to go out for dinner because you're the one that just called someone out. But you know it's the best thing for you. And I think that's the appreciation for him, and I think that's the breath of fresh air we get, is that he understands what you can be, even if you don't, and he understands what it's going to take to get there. He also understands that you're not seeing yourself right. That's not who you are. You're not a top-line centerman. You're a third-line centerman, or you're a third-line winger. And do it well, and you'll fit in, and we'll win. And I just love the reality that he brings. He's a bucket of cold water to some guys who need it, and he's also that warm fire that some guys that need it. You know what I mean? He can be both, and he definitely is.
Yeah, and that's exactly why guys like Zach Werenski and Seth Jones, I'm sure there are plenty of days they don't appreciate him when they come to work. But years down the road,
yes,
just like Vinny LeCavalier, who didn't appreciate him in Tampa at the time he was telling him what to do and how to do it, appreciates him now, and I think the same is true with these guys. And I'm not saying they hate him, because they don't, but he pushes you. And some days I'm sure that grates on your nerves, but look at what Seth Jones has become, just as one example underneath this guy.
Yeah, and it's just like when you're 12, 13, 14, 15 years old and your dad is the one that just drives you crazy. But then when you turn 28 and you're like, wow, that made a lot of sense.
Right. I'm waiting. I got a long time. You got a long time, too. You got a longer time than me to wait for that. All right. One thing that I did ask John Tortorella today, though, was about injuries, because we can go through. I watched Josh Anderson play, and he scored a goal in the first round, and that was it. He skated fast, but there something looked off. Cam Atkinson looked like he had lost a gear, just looked like something was off. So I asked John Tortorella how much injuries had to do with kind of losing the steam in the series against Boston, and here's what he said.
Injuries had nothing to do with it. We had three defensemen out, but that just gives you a look into seeing some of the depth we have in our back end that came through. And Clendenning stepped in, Kooks, Harry assumed more responsibility. Remember, I wasn't even playing Kooks at certain times this year. So, no, the injuries, all teams go through it, all the injuries, no. That had no bearing on it.
Yeah, and you know what, Bob? That tells me that, I mean, we knew the players that were out. They were the guys that couldn't play, players played with injuries. We know that. I think the break was great for a few guys, but you're right on those two players you mentioned, Anderson and Atkinson, two key cogs here. Anderson played physical in that last game, too, and I thought maybe he was too focused on the physicality. I'm not sure. He had some good chances on the backhand and the outside of the net, just couldn't get in there. And Atkinson's speed, to me, was evident. I think there was a gear, definitely, that he was missing. Those injuries, I mean, there's something nagging them, but obviously not enough for John Tortorella to address. He expects you to play through injuries. Are you hurt? Are you injured? That's always a question in the locker room. Hurt means, you know what, it really is sore and uncomfortable, but I can get my skate on and tie it up and I can skate. Injured means, I mean, it's hanging off. My ankle's hanging on by a thread. I need surgery. I can't even move or breathe. So are you hurt? Are you injured? So he gets the most. He pushes those guys. And, I'm sure there's a lot of things guys are dealing with that we don't know about.
Yeah, I'm sure. But one guy who's an example the other way is Boone Jenner, who didn't practice in between rounds one and rounds two until the first full practice before going to Boston. And Boone Jenner was terrific during the second round. So, but then again, Boone Jenner is a gamer. That's what you expect.
Throwback.
And that's what you get.
Him and Savard are throwbacks
yes.
for me.
Absolutely.
They're two guys that have been here, and the great part about those two, they're going to be here for a while. I mean, these are two guys that you build teams around. And we talked about superstars. Imagine how many teams would love to have those two players. And we always talk about Jones and Werenski and Atkinson and Dubois. But to me, the key pieces, and I know you feel this too, when you walk in that locker room, people gravitate towards what Boone and David are doing. And I think it's because of that respectability of they just do their job. And David's a family man. He's got young kids, and he's got his wife who's at every single game, and they just adore what they do, and it's refreshing. And then Boone is the player. He seems to include everyone around the table. You know what I mean? There's no one when he's in the room or if he's going for lunch, there's no one that he's avoiding. He wants everyone to be a part of what he's doing, and I love that as a teammate. I love what he brings to that locker room.
Yes, and you're right. Those are under-the-radar guys when it comes to superstars, but the way they carry themselves, superstars to their teammates, no doubt about it. We're going to wrap up the final edition of the Inside Edge presented by Kia for this season right after this on 97.1 The Fan. Welcome back to the Inside Edge presented by Kia here on 97.1 The Fan, putting the wraps on this. We don't have a lot of time to do it. Jody Shelley, I will ask you this. Artemi Panarin said after the game, you never know, but we do know. He's gone. How are the Blue Jackets going to be able to find a replacement for him?
It's going to be tough. I don't think you do. Not that player right away. I mean, there's going to be some players that need to step up. But he's a superstar in the National Hockey League. He's a guy that I think he's one of the best at what he does. He competes. He's a great guy to be around. He's young. It's going to be tough. I still can't figure out how they got him. I've said that a lot publicly, but they got him here. It's been fun to have him. I don't know. They got a draft. They got to figure it out. And I love what Yarmo said. If you don't want to be a Blue Jacket, good luck. And Torch reiterated that this afternoon in the press media availability. And I think that there are guys that want to be Blue Jackets, and I think Yarmo and his staff will find a game breaker that the Blue Jackets need. They've always done a good job of going and find their weaknesses and fill them.
does Matt Duchene want to be a Blue Jacket? I think that's a very legit question. And in looking at him, hey, he had ups and downs from the time he got here. He also had 10 points during the playoffs. What do you think?
I don't know. I just think as a player, when you get to this point of the season and July 1st is the next stop, you go to July 1st and see who wants you and what's appealing. So that to me says there's probably a 20% chance, maybe 15% chance he comes back here. But I could be wrong. And does, I mean, he's fit in for the playoffs, but is he a guy that fits in long term here? Do you want to sign them to 8 years or 7 years? I don't know. I don't know where that, I don't know.
And I just wonder, and I don't know anything about it, and I've said for years, I never want to be a GM. But if you are a general manager and you are losing, you know you're going to lose your top player in Panarin.
Yeah.
You know you're losing your goaltender. You get this guy. And don't forget, now, let me also add this. Jarmo has long coveted Matt Duchene from the time that he was with the Colorado Avalanche. He wanted to get him. He wasn't able to get him that time. He was able to get him from the Ottawa Senators. But at any point, because he's a good player, I'm not talking about a guy that's maybe he's okay.
He's great.
But do you almost want to – you want to save a little bit of face too, right? I mean, when you're losing players of that caliber, does
that factor
in? I don't
think so. I don't think so. I don't think you do. I think with the young talent, if you're really that confident in it, then and the advantage here is you see where this guy fits in your locker room. You've already seen it. So where does he fit in? So you take that card. We don't know where he fits in. But if he's part of the great nucleus that are the great people that are part of that nucleus that have been here for 4, 5, 6 years, even 2 years with Dubois, you don't, if he doesn't fit in, he doesn't fit in. You let him go. And I don't think you don't care about the free agents you brought in. They were rentals. All these guys that were here already were rentals, and you already still have a good nucleus. It's not like the whole team relied on those four guys. There's some great things about this organization.
Where does Alexander Wennberg fit in?
I don't think he does. I don't see him fitting in. I think it was telling what happened in this season. I hope they can iron it out so he can fit in. He's a heck of a player. He thinks the game well, but he got in for a couple games, four games. He didn't get a shot on net. He was out again for game six when it mattered. He's not a guy that's relied upon right now the way he's playing.
I'm interested to see if Texier is going to be able to start the year here next year
yeah.
and stay here. And I don't mean it in a bad way, but, you know, he came in. Everything was great. Everything came up roses, and then he hit the Boston Bruins. That's what the rookie year is going to be like for him.
Well, it's I mean, just when you – that's the NHL. When you think you have it figured out, especially at 19 years old, it bites you. And hey, listen – Boston was different than Tampa. He admitted it to us. But the regular season is different. Training camp is different. Let this guy get in and be loved. He's probably going to be here training this summer, and he could be a huge addition.
Jody, it's been great. It really has
been awesome.
Fun. Thanks for working with me during the playoffs.
Inside.
I enjoyed those six games. They were great.
Thank you.
And that'll wrap up.
I did
up.
Too.
Oh, it was so much fun.
Magical ride. And
that's why
man.
We're mad, because it's over. It was
yeah,
so much
yeah,
fun.
Yeah.
So now it's time to get on with our life's work, whatever that may be, for the next couple
Enjoy
months.
Your summer, buddy. It's going to be a quick one, and then back to work with this exciting team again next year.
Thank you, Jody. Enjoy yours as well. That's Jody Shelley. I'm Bob McElligott, and thanks to you for being here all through the season for the Inside Edge presented by Kia. We couldn't do it without you. We wouldn't do it without you. Well, we'd try, but they wouldn't let us. That's going to do it for tonight's show here on 97.1 The Fan.